Hello, Recursive Community. Our next guest comes all the way from London and has very special interest in Central and Eastern Europe. Bakrom Ibrahimov is partner at Molten Ventures, which invests in Europe's tech leaders from Series A to growth stage. Bakrom joined Molten in 2022 from EBRD Venture Capital, where he founded and managed commitments of over 500 million euros over three VC funds. Previously, Bakrom was leading investments with the Virgin Green Fund and TLCom Capital. He was also an internet finance director at Virgin Media and tech investment banker with Cohen & Co. and Credit Suisse. Bakrom holds a degree from London School of Economics, Cambridge University, and Tashkent State Technical University. Bakrom, welcome to the Recursive Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to bring you back in time when you started your career as a, would it be correct to say technology investment banker?
Yeah, that would be correct.
Yeah. What sparked your love for technology and eventually led you to this field of work?
I started my career in tech investment banking, that was the early kind of training years, spent 2 years in the investment banking doing specifically technology sector. And I guess on your question, why technology, it's something that I was always interested. Although I cannot tell the story, the usual story that, you know, I had a computer from 5 year old and so was coding since then. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, I was born and raised in former Soviet Union country, Uzbekistan. And the first time I had access to a computer was late school years. But from very early years, I was very interested in math, physics, sciences. My parents, they were in sciences and physics and chemistry. And I myself kind of spent actually my school years in the math and physics concentration school. Mm-hmm. And I then started my bachelor degree first in engineering and then moved to economics. So kind of I was always interested in sciences, tech. And during the kind of my teenage years, Soviet Union broke down and the central funding from Moscow for sciences ceased. So at that point in time, I needed to divert my attention to the economics area. But I tried always to balance this, make sure the sciences, technology interests, and the economics. And that's why I pursued the career, started my career as in the combination of finance and technology.
Can you tell me maybe which were the most exciting tech innovations at this time when you started your career?
It was actually it was Internet 1.0. Actually, it was it was 99, 2000, and actually the first tech bubble just burst, right? Yeah. And a lot of the companies were going bankrupt, but at the same time, a lot of internet companies, but at the same time, a lot of the kind of today brand names, they were just, you know, accelerating their growth and proving their place in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that these were also very, very exciting times. How did you grow then later on an appetite for the startup world and also for venture capital? What led you there?
In tech investment banking, in those couple of years, I worked a lot with the startups, with tech startups, and as well as after my tech investment banking years, I went to work for internet company, Virgin Media. They used to be called NTL at that point in time, and I was a finance director for the internet division. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, that was again early 2000. Mm-hmm. Internet bandwidth, just the internet connection bandwidth, was very scarce, and it was scarce asset. And what I spent a lot of time is understanding the economics of the telecom networks, right? Understanding the bandwidth demand, bandwidth consumption. What are the consumers actually using the internet? Because we're kind of trying to predict the capacity of those networks, and spend a lot of time looking at the consumer behavior, trying to predict kind of the bandwidth consumption and, you know, how much needs to be invested in the telco infrastructure. And that's why I spent a lot of time researching new applications and learning about tech companies. And after that experience, made a transition to venture capital.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating that you have been observing, you know, these trends developing from the burst of the first internet bubble. And now we are again in a period of major transformation. Do you see any similarities between these two transitions, internet 1.0 and now we're in the middle of the next one? Are they patterns which are repeating or... How would you evaluate, you know, this transition that is happening now, knowing what happened in the first one?
I think we are in the downturns kind of right now, in the kind of tech downturn. I think kind of the response of the companies and the environment that the companies are facing, they are similar, but at the same time very different, right? So, so the downturn during the first tech bubble burst in 2000 was not accompanied by macroeconomic turmoil, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing today is actually is a bit unique because we have asset pricing correction across all of the industries, right? So the high inflation caused much higher interest rates, and that's high interest rates, obviously, they impact the valuations for all the assets, but specifically for the technology sector, because technology has a kind of technology cash flows, technology assets, they have much longer lived, much longer lived expectations on the cash flow generation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're most impacted. So, I think what caused right now the slowdown in the tech sector is very different, but the environment that companies face is similar because, I mean, this is, again, an environment where the companies which were struggling proving their business model, they would suffer most.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an environment where a lot of the companies, they need to prove their business model, to prove their kind of use cases in the market, and really focus on building sustainable business, not just the growth.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that this is also something that will affect founders in Central and Eastern Europe?
Definitely, yes, definitely. I mean, it impacts founders elsewhere. I think, though, kind of my opinion, maybe biased, that's the region where I'm looking after.
Mm-hmm.
I think founders in Central Eastern Europe, they have been on a relative basis, they've been always more frugal, right? So more frugal in terms of the use of capital, more product focused, right? And I think these are the elements really which should pay it off in the current environment.
Mm-hmm. So you became part of Molten at the last year, not so long ago, but I wondered, in general, what is the mission of Molten? What is the impact that you want to have on the technology world and also the value that you're bringing to your shareholders? Because Molten is also is actually the largest publicly traded VC fund, I think, operating in the whole world, right?
It's one of the larger funds, yes, in Europe.
Yeah, in Europe. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is your mission? How do you create value? What is the impact that you want to leave?
Yeah, what do? We back entrepreneurs to build category-defining businesses, category-defining leading businesses, and we support entrepreneurs in kind of providing financing, but also helping them with their day-to-day kind of key decision making, strategic decision making, trying to be a partner, trusted partner, both in the good times and the bad times. And at the same time, kind of really focusing on building sustainable businesses, supporting sustainable businesses, which basically means as well, for us, ESG is very important, right? So environmental, social, and governance aspects are very important. That's something that we work closely with the portfolio companies, again with a view, because we're not just here to, you know, to invest in companies and exit them as soon as possible, but what we ultimately want to do is build sustainable businesses, sustainable successes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you evaluate the potential of Central and Eastern Europe? Why is this region becoming of special interest to you? Now we also have you as someone who is would be responsible for that region, more or less the go-to person for founders who might be interested in working with Molten. What did you see over the past, let's say, 10 years happening in Central and Eastern Europe?
I think what's interesting about this, about Eastern Europe region, and, you know, one way to look at it at the very high level is, if you were to look kind of where the largest number of developers, right, globally.
Mm-hmm.
So the countries would be, you know, US, China, India. These are the countries which has the highest number of developers globally. However, if you were to look at the number of developers per dollar GDP,
mm-hmm.
and rank every country in the world, right, what you'll notice that the top 20 countries, they're all Eastern European.
Wow.
So basically, okay. What it basically says that you have high concentration of developed kind of engineering talent focused in small economies.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that this is a blessing. This is a blessing that entrepreneurs find themselves in small economies, because from day one, entrepreneurs in Eastern Europe, they have to think about global market.
Mm-hmm.
They have to think about being competitive on the global market, how to go after the global market. They don't have, advantage like US entrepreneurs being located in the homogeneous largest market. So that basically global perspective, that's actually, I find most interesting in Eastern Europe, because ultimately what we're trying to do, we're trying to find outliers on a global scale, companies that make a difference, not just at a country level, but companies that make a difference in the markets that they operate on a global scale.
And why, how is this now different than in terms of your strategy for Central and Eastern Europe than before? You have already made investments in our region.
Yes,
what is new now?
Okay. I think it's kind of, a lot of, yes, Molten has made a number of investments in the region. And actually, a lot of success cases that Molten has had, they have some roots in Central Eastern Europe companies like, TransferWise, Revolut, UiPath, Peak Games, more recent FintechOS, Realize, right?
Mm.
So a lot of the actual investments that Molten has made, they have roots in Eastern Europe. And that's exactly basically why we want to double down on the region. That's, actually, if you look at the number of success cases coming out of Eastern Europe, it's been accelerating. And we indeed seeing a slowdown in the venture capital industry globally, Europe specifically, mm-hmm. but the slowdown is less so in specifically Eastern Europe.
Okay.
The other dynamic that we see relative to other markets, right?
Okay.
We see lack of the lack of financing post the seed stage. So actually, what we see today is that in many Eastern European countries, Bulgaria including, there is actually today a very healthy ecosystem of seed stage investors.
True.
And they have been really kind of supported by local governments, local efforts to really catalyze grassroots innovation, which has been very, very helpful.
DEF, EBRD as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm.
But to much less extent, the financing beyond the seed, right? Actually, where you help the companies really scale their sales channels, mm-hmm. right? Really accelerate product development cycle. So that actually has been much less. What we see is much less in Eastern Europe, including some of the other funds, some of our peers. Very few people actually have dedicated effort, kind of scouting actively. I mean, everybody invests in companies out of Eastern Europe, but very few, if any, have dedicated resources specifically on a consistent basis scouting that region. And that's what we see, that's what we want to capitalize, both mm-hmm. kind of the helping the very tech-focused, product-focused founders going after the global global market opportunity, and at the same time capitalizing this funding gap between the seed stage and the growth equity stage. So at the growth equity, actually, you know, big funds, they would invest in any company, but really helping and bringing that best practice perspective, how to scale sales, how to build a team. That's something that we want to actually double down on.
I think it's not an accident that exactly the stage is called the Valley of Death. So I wonder, next to capital, what kind of expertise can you bring into a company from on the side of Molten? I guess it's a question of investment strategy, but what is the relationship that you're building with the founding team exactly on this stage? Are you investing and then you move away, or do you somehow support them also in the management decisions and how to scale the operations, all those tricky parts of scaling a business?
We help companies really to address strategic decisions, right? So we always take minority positions. Okay. We always really focus on that the founders are in the driving seat, right? They are actually, they are the largest shareholders. That's what we'd like to see. We like to see that they run the business, and that's what we're supporting. We actually, when we invest, for us, kind of really appraising the management team is at the core what we do. At the same time, for the strategic decisions where we can kind of help, these are the areas that we focus on. Mm-hmm. So we have a very rich investment experience, and we've seen a number of different circumstances, a number of different, structures, and we know how to what are the real best practice KPIs are. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we try to help the founders really kind of tackle the next stage and be with them. There are no cases which only success, right? There is always bumpy road. Mm-hmm. And be with them both in a kind of in a bad times and good times, be a trusted partner.
I often speak to founders about their relationship to their investors, and of course, in the different stages, is different. It depends also from one investor to another one. If it's an angel investment or VC investment, there are all these aspects. But I hear also most of the investors speaking about the coachability of founders, and I wonder for those who are maybe in the early stage and who would like to work with you, how can you maybe give us a bit of an insight? How is this dynamics changing from, seed stage to, let's say, post-series A? How is this relationship changing? How is the dynamics different between an investor and a founder?
I would say that, once you kind of raise large amount of capital, obviously the decisions have bigger consequences, right? Mm. So, decisions have bigger consequences, and some decisions are kind of reversible, others are non-reversible, others can, can compound into bigger issues. So indeed, kind of with the larger capital, I think comes more responsibility. So, that's why really important to have the right investors, right? Mm. But at the same time, I think what is really important, I mean, everybody talks about the value add, right? Everybody, all the investors talk about, they bring this value, bring that value.
Some of them prefer
but,
not to.
I think, to my mind, the value add comes with the right mentality, right? The meaning that actually the philosophy that we have and our approach is we serve entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. So entrepreneurs is one of our customers. The other customer is being our fund investors. So we serve entrepreneurs, and we're not to dictate, how to run the businesses and kind of impose our way of doing things, but really helping founders tackle the major challenges, and mostly tackle them by questioning, by actually questioning in terms of helping the founders to consider a number of different avenues, helping the founders to consider different options and kind of more letting the founder choose how they want to achieve their own vision, not our vision.
Yeah, the vision is, I guess, always with the founder. Good, but let's come to the other question. What are you looking at in a founding team before you invest? Of course, at the Series A, organization will be a bit bigger. They will be also having substantial revenue. What else would you be looking at?
I would think that, you know, the substantial revenue is actually is rare at Series A.
Okay.
So that's not something that we focus on. I mean, the one thing that we focus at Series A specifically is really backing the founders who are addressing large markets, imminent markets, mm-hmm. Imminent for change markets. And founders who really intimately know the markets, right? So really kind of oftentimes the first question is you know, why do you want to do this, right? What is the relationship between yourself, between your background and the problem that you're trying to address? And this is being because this intimate knowledge of this enables founders to have intimate knowledge, also enables them to have resistance, kind of persistence. You know, it's a bumpy road, it's a long-term road, and the founders need to be really really resilient. Mm-hmm. You don't want to back founders who are here just to, you know, make capital, mm-hmm. but you want to back founders who want to change the world, and that's something that we're looking for. Exceptional founders and technology in terms of how do they compete in the market, mm-hmm. how do you differentiate themselves, and as well as go-to-market strategy, mm-hmm. how scalable it is.
You know, when I was doing my research and I was reading exactly about this phrase that I think you used in another interview, you know, founders who have an intimate relationship to the market, I found it kind of, it made me smile. But maybe you can give an example, you know, of who would be a founder where you felt like, okay, this is where we feel like, okay, this is the, you know, relationship that is necessary for a founding team to have in order to go through this roller coaster of being, you know, in a startup.
So, no, I give you one example. I mean, yeah. I invested in a company called Pixart. Today, they are the largest mobile photo editor globally, mm-hmm. right? They are out of Armenia, out of, you know, all these European countries. Mm-hmm. And the founder, Havanes, you know, he developed the first version for his own daughter, right? So so that's something that is really, mm-hmm. he felt passionate about, you know, put a lot of effort. And this is something that that continues driving him, is giving tools to express themselves.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that you yourself were born and raised in the Soviet Union, but then you have worked also with the European, but also with US founders. And I wonder, are there any differences in the mindset that you have been observing? You know, there has been a lot said about the risk aversion of European founders, and that we are not so tolerant to failure, that we don't have a healthy relationship to failure. But what are other, you know, mindset differences that you have been observing between the founders? Maybe we can segment it even more, you know, Western European and Central and Eastern European. Yeah,
I think versus US, it's I mean, US founders, they operate in the largest homogeneous market, with the richest kind of tech ecosystem, right? Yeah. So I guess that's one of the reasons why the why there is, you know, more risk taking, mm-hmm. more focus to growth. But at the same time, indeed, there is more tolerance to failure, right? Mm-hmm. There is more tolerance to failure. There is a culture, actually, that, you know, benefiting from failure experience. Mm-hmm. There is a culture of, as well as, you know, really going, you know, being maverick, right? So many success cases in the US, they were started by immigrants, right? In Western Europe, I think I think one is the ecosystem is much younger, mm-hmm. right? But it has. I think it has grown a lot. I mean, I've come to this sector in 2000, and since then, the Western European, the Western European market has grown a lot, and it's changing substantially. And I believe, actually, you know, again, maybe biased, but the most interesting opportunities, they will continue coming out of Europe, mm-hmm. You know. What is the mindset difference in Eastern Europe? I guess, you know, being more frugal and as well being very product driven. Mm. And it offers advantages and disadvantages, right? On the disadvantages, it's, you know, at times it is hard to convince, you know, founder, you know, let's hire this very expensive salesperson, even though, you know, his or her salary is, you know, multiple times higher than yours, right? Than CEO. We still need to build a sustainable sales effort. Kind of this frugality sometimes is something that needs to be overcome. But most of the time is actually it works in favor, because this real product focus enables a lot of the Eastern European founders pursue what's called product-led growth strategy, mm-hmm. which is trying to acquire and retain customers via product differentiation, not just you know, spending on marketing and sales, but actually using the product to itself mm-hmm. to acquire customers and retain customers.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes feel like maybe this is valid only for the early stage, that founders in our region have like a glass ceiling of, you know, when it comes to the ambitions for international growth. Maybe because we don't have also that many role models and examples of startups which originate from this region, on who became then a global success. Now, slowly, we do have great examples like UiPath that you invested in, Viva Wallet in Greece. We have now Payhook, also the first unicorn in Bulgaria. We see that more and more often. And still, this is an observation made by local investors who say that they would like to see more ambition. Already in the early stage. Is it something that you see as well when you hear founders pitching to you?
I think you know, the challenge is, I guess, for Eastern European founders is this, that, you know, you really need to go after the global markets, right? That's the threshold is quite high. It is, I think, again, I see that as a benefit, because we as VCs, that's what we're looking for. Mm. We're looking for large outcomes. But indeed, we need to have more success cases. I do think that the kind of the best stimulus, you know, a lot of the time when there are conferences or some other events, when discussed what needs to be done to improve the ecosystem, a lot of the times, you know, kind of there are discussions about regulatory tax incentives, right? Mm. Which are important, but I don't think that they are as catalytic as the success cases, right? So if you look at the you know, the number of companies that came out from Skype, right? It's you know, there are dozens of those, right? Another great example, actually very recent, is in Turkey, Peak Games, right?
Yeah.
Peak Games, Turkey has, in a very short period of time, became the global hub for the mobile game developers. Mm. Just you know, capitalized by Peak Games, that the teams that came out of that. I think Romania is becoming much more active since the UiPath growth. So I think these are the real,
catalyzers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's well put, actually. do you have a favorite question that you ask to founders when they pitch to you?
No, that's, you know, as I mentioned, my favorite question is this, is why do you actually, you know, what it is that relates you to this market? And that's something that I always ask. And I also see how engaging the founder is, you know, describing it. You know, to me, the most interesting question, actually, at the back of my mind that I ask myself is, do I have the benefit of the doubt that actually I'm so much being engaged that I would actually have a benefit of the doubt, drop everything what I'm doing and actually join that entrepreneur to work for him or her, to follow that vision.
Yeah. Do you wish you were sometimes on the other side?
Well, this is a question. This is a question is, you know, would I actually, you know, do I have this drive? And that's, I think that's important because that's as well how founders most of the time hire talent for their, for their companies.
I would like to reverse the question now, you know, given exactly the macroeconomic situations that we're currently in, it is a roller coaster for founders currently, you know, to navigate through all the crises that we are going through. I lost count of them. But what is the responsibility of the investor, especially, you know, after the Series A? How do you see your support in backing portfolio companies and helping them navigate through these difficult times? As we hear, I guess it's not applicable for all of them. Not all of them are going through difficult times. Crisis can be also great for some industries, but especially for those who are currently going through a hard patch.
Yes, we, you know, in those circumstances, obviously the supporting the portfolio is number one priority for most of the investors, for us including. And we do help founders really kind of trying to focus them on thinking kind of, you may call it more realistically about the environment where we are, taking decisions. Oftentimes, it involves reducing cost base, making those difficult decisions for the long term success of the business, and indeed, as well as assuring that where we can, where it makes sense, that we will provide kind of financial support as well in these difficult times. I think what is really important is the communication, right? Communication, really transparency with the founders at those times is really important. That I remember, for example, coronavirus situation, that was the same, right? And a number of companies, actually, at that point in time, I had some of the portfolio companies, another fund in the travel industry, for example, right? And the travel at that point in time stopped completely, right? And there was actually two portfolio companies in travel. And, you know, to one of them, I said, look, there is a difficult time. We're going to go through this period where you would have no revenue. But we really believe what you've been doing. You've been consistently executing, and we will support you from that period. So you really need to focus on really, you know, in this environment, maybe invest more in the product development so we come up stronger out of that, right? To another business, unfortunately, which has been struggling even before that, it's really important to communicate upfront that we will not be able to provide this this support, right? You've been struggling. We had a lot of issues, and you know, we will not be able to support you through that period. And being open and timely in terms of the feedback and kind of our position, it is very critical.
Do you have no-go scenario in the relationship with a father where you say, okay, this is just this is not going to work out, a reaction from their side, or a situation where you felt, okay, this is not with our principles or values or whatever?
Those circumstances happen. They're not that rare, right? And they may happen due to a number of circumstances, both in terms of the to a rare extent some principles of how doing businesses, but more often in terms of we have two types of customers, the entrepreneurs and also our fund investors, right? That we need to make sure that we are really produce economic results, and we need to support businesses that we kind of believe will be successful in the longer term.
Yeah. I'm thinking that exactly in the stage where you're investing, you're probably also nurturing a lot of relationships to the early stage funds. And VCs sometimes do not talk too much or do not talk very transparently with each other. But what would be the precondition for you to work well with an early stage fund from Central and Eastern Europe?
I think the key The key condition is that we have the same that everybody around the table, right? So all the investors, we have the same agenda. We have the same agenda, and the agenda is to help founders build a big business, right? Mm-hmm. And it is, and as well as making sure that everybody, as well, all the investors are really with the mindset that this is a founder's business, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we're not here to pursue every time our kind of own interest, but we are here to help the founders build big business, and that's a focus.
But isn't it like that? Like there are two levels of doing business when you invest venture capital. You know, on the one side, there is the company's business, but on the other side, there is also the business between the VC funds. I wonder sometimes if, you know, the two businesses are not going too much away from each other, if they're not going astray.
There are circumstances, because every investor, they have their own circumstances, you know. Some investors may be approaching end of their life, you know, fund life. Some investors may not have capital to support the business further. So there are those circumstances, but I think that happens, but not that often, because venture capitalists, it is a very long-term game, right? So it's a very long-term, the impact from the investing is a very long-term. And I think mostly really investors try to be reasonable and act with the in mind, with their long-term standing in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, lately has been a lot of discussion due to what we see happening also in the States. You know, for the first time, we have founders who have been charged with sentences for defrauding their investors, for not being ethical on how they operate, how they do business. I think, you know, I wonder what is happening on a systemic level, maybe in the US, where we in Europe could actually learn. Although we are catching up, we're mm-hmm. still slower in the development as the US. US is still, when it comes to venture capital, also the biggest market.
Yes, I mean, those cases as well happen in Europe. I mean, they are less public because the magnitude probably has been smaller.
Mm.
Those cases has happened, and as well as, yes, in many cases, this is also a reflection of the shortcomings of what the investors have been doing.
Yeah.
Both during the diligence phase and also during the time when they were working with the companies. Actually, a number of those cases, some of the investors never took board seats and kind of were relying entirely on the founders to drive the business.
Yeah, true. So I think there is no doubt that Central and Eastern European founders excel when it comes to focus on the product, to engineering talents. But somehow, I think we're still missing long traditions when it comes to sales, to marketing, also maybe to management. Is this an observation that you would share? I think, especially in the stage when pre-series A and afterwards, where you mostly invest, where the company is preparing to scale globally, these functions, these business functions become even more critical. Is it difficult for founders, especially from our region, to adapt, to learn, to develop this new skill set that is necessary?
I think it is difficult. It's it's a lot of the times it is related to the skills of the founders, but it's also there may be some case for that, but also at the same time the challenge is very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we've been discussing, for most of the founders out of Eastern Europe, they need to be thinking about either global market or going to the US, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that effort is actually more challenging. Most of the time, you know, if a company is an enterprise software business, most of the time founders need to relocate to the US and actually be be the first account executive selling the product in the US and mm-hmm. developing the sales methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So it is indeed the kind of the magnitude of challenge is bigger for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as there is less track record of doing so. Mm-hmm. Less track record in terms of building sales organizations. It's been improving. But that's indeed the challenge.
If there are founders maybe now listening or watching us who would like to bridge this gap for themselves, where can they start? How can you prepare for this kind of new challenge in terms of marketing and sales and also management? I think managing an organization at this scale is very much different than being the CEO of a early stage startup.
Yeah, I think, a lot of the times I think there is a bit of the naive expectation that, this is a straightforward process, is just hiring the right person, right salesperson, who would resolve all the sales issues, right? it doesn't really work like that, right? And especially, when going to the US, in the US, everybody has a great CV and everybody can sell themselves, but, not necessarily deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So I think founders need to kind of realize that actually most of the times, as I mentioned, they need to be the first sales executives that actually develops kind of really narrows down and defines the market to address, and really kind of develop the sales methodology, and then with some proof points, only after that start hiring salespeople who would actually build upon that.
Mm-hmm.
But the founders, they are the best know their product, the best know how this product is differentiates in the market, and most of the times they are the ones who really need to catalyze the sales in the initial stages.
And in the best scenario, they have this also intimate relationship to the market.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder often if sales is something that you can develop over time. Is it a skill set that can be learned, or is it a talent that you're born with? I think, especially in our region, people shy away a bit from the sales part, or have a prejudice of what does it mean to, actually sell to customers. I think sales, personally, I think that sales can be learned best if you do it, by practicing it. I don't know what you observe, but I can definitely support this idea that it is a responsibility of the executive team to, set the path on a new market and then hire the best possible salespeople to build upon that. That's my experience as well.
Indeed so. And, what we're most interested in is actually not about, let's hire the salesperson with the best sales skill, best sales track record. What's most important for us is to build a repeatable process, right? Really.
Mm.
It's all about the kind of repeatable process, scalable process.
Do you expect to see that before you invest in a company, you know, to see these playbooks developed on...
Not necessarily. What we want to see, before is we want to understand really the value that the product brings to the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Really understanding kind of the customer value and how the customers perceive that technology. How does it help them address their problems?
Mm-hmm.
And with the sales scale up is most of the time that's something that we work with the founders.
Mm-hmm. Silicon Valley has been up until now the ecosystem that is given more like an example for all the innovation ecosystems that we have in the world. But we see now more and more often that you cannot just copy paste the model and bring it to Singapore or to Bangalore or, the other hubs that are currently developing in the world. And I think the same goes to Central and Eastern Europe. And still, is there something that you think we can adopt from the culture in the Silicon Valley, or the ways that the ecosystem has been built here in our region?
Yes, I think, you know, as we spoke, I think the risk tolerance, I think that's something that that kind of you know, really going after the big outcomes. I think that's kind of what risk tolerance is about. Is
and I guess this applies not only to founders but also to investors.
Indeed, so. Yes.
It is. Yeah.
And you know, really, and you know, being maybe as well as you know, Silicon Valley is an enormous ecosystem, right? And it's you know, you would go to the coffee shop and you see people doing investments and you know, closing deals, partnerships, acquisitions, and you know, and there is an open sharing, right? Open sharing of the ideas of the you know, oftentimes helping each other without any expectations of benefit in return. So that's something that as well, I think, that would be good to see across Eastern Europe, but it's more difficult because it's quite much more dispersed market. But you know, I think the Eastern European market is actually probably the fastest growing venture capital investment markets, so, at least in Europe. Yeah,
definitely. Also, Europe has been producing steadily unicorns, and I think we surpassed China last year? No, 2021, right? I'm not so sure. It's a vanity metric, so I don't remember it too well.
I think in 2021, indeed, the observation that number of unicorns exceeded in Europe than China. But I think it is a reflection of the two points, right? One is that was a year of the peak growth, tech growth, in Europe specifically, right?
Yes.
And at the same time, this was the year when what's called tech crackdown started in China, right? So in China, the government's really, you know, the government really started imposing antitrust issues, started imposing new regulation. A lot of the companies' valuation deflated substantially. So I think it is both reflection of the peak in Europe and at the same time quite a challenging environment in China that specifically that year.
Exactly. Maybe it's an outlier year. Yeah, not necessarily showing a trend. But still, do you think that Europe has maybe greater potential in certain verticals where we should, I don't know, maybe profile a bit more? Do you see that happening or not yet?
I think, you know, Europe ecosystem is obviously has grown a lot, and it offers actually in terms of the growth a lot yet to come, right? A lot yet to come. And Europe has always been very strong on the technical side. So that will continue. And I do believe kind of the opportunities in Europe, they're much more interesting than elsewhere. Specifically on the capital efficiency, right? There's been a recent study, which actually, I think it was by McKinsey in 21, which actually looked at the revenue generated per equity dollar invested. And not just Europe came up much better than the US, but Eastern Europe actually came up as the highest kind of highest metric. And I think the potential of Europe will continue to be very strong. Of course, right now we are in an environment where there is a lot of the investments being done in artificial intelligence. And that's something today that in terms of the amount of capital deployed, I would think that US and China probably had versus Europe.
Yeah. Are there verticals where you personally are more excited to invest in or to learn about?
Yeah, I think that kind of really
what is your passion?
Yeah, we are right now in the vintage of AI adoption in terms of AI technology adoption. That's a vintage. It's you know, if we look at the global economy, is 100 trillion. I think the exact number is probably kind of 90, well, close to number 93 trillion.
But the AI is also a very broad definition.
Yes, but you know, what I wanted to say, what I want to say is that two-thirds of that global economy, is sectors like healthcare, education, manufacturing, they've seen relatively low penetration of technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the artificial intelligence is something that is actually, well, you know, driving the next stage of software growth, really digitalizing those sectors.
Okay, so this is where you see the category-defining potential for Molten, right?
Indeed, and that's something actually that most of the investors in this market are focusing on. This is something, this is a secular trend which will, you know, transit through any kind of market downturn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. What about Web3?
I think Web3 is an interesting category. This is something that we're looking at and continue investing into. And it's a different architecture of the web. But I think the interesting thing of the artificial intelligence today, it pervades through every stack, right?
Mm-hmm.
It pervades through every stack, every changes all the categories. And I would personally think it is much bigger opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. At the end, maybe I can ask you something which refers a bit to us, the recursive. We do try to give a bit more insight in what is happening in Central and Eastern Europe. I'm happy that you reached out to us and give us a sign that you will be in Sofia so that we can also do this podcast. It's a real pleasure. But is there something that you would wish that we do or report about a bit more consistently so that we can be helpful to other investors like you who are based in outside of the region? What can we do better
I think the interesting thing it is you do approach kind of this Eastern Europe as a single theme. I think that's really interesting and helpful, because indeed a lot of the kind of challenges that founders are facing, they are similar across Eastern European countries. So that's something I think is indeed kind of that approach is very helpful for us and for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And really, you know, letting the ecosystem know the companies come out of the region, I think that's something very, very helpful and noble.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. If there is something that we can do better, you can still ping me. It doesn't have to be public. But we are also here to serve, and we see ourselves as an ecosystem born and community-born project. So as long as we deliver value to the ecosystem, the better it is. And one of the approaches is, of course, to maybe build a bit more, a better brand for CE. That's
indeed
what we see here. Thank you so much, Patron.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving us the sign that you are in Sofia and that we would that we had this opportunity to talk in person. I hope we will see you a bit more often here, not only in Sofia, but in general.
Indeed, definitely.
Yes. If someone wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way?
You can email me, bahrom@molten.vc, or reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So you're responsive there too. And you would be looking for founders who have an intimate relationship to the market. Sorry. But also category-defining ideas and global ambitions, yeah?
That's right, yes.
Next on the Recursive Podcast, Lavinia Mehedintsu, co-founder of the social learning platform Offbeat.
And there are two dimensions here. First, how aware am I of what I need to learn to become better?
Mm-hmm.
And how aware am I of what the company needs for me to learn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just throwing money at people, in my opinion, it's not the best way of doing things because we are in an era of information overload. Right, so it's really hard to choose. And we've seen many companies having those learning stipends that you mentioned that just are not used because people don't know what to choose. So, you know, companies giving clarity about where we are heading and what our skills and our competencies need to be, what we need to learn, and then matching that vision with my personal strategy as an individual, mm-hmm. what I would like to learn and where I feel I can perform best, raising that awareness for people, I think that's the best way to do things.
And if you're just as passionate about innovation as we are, hit subscribe for the Recursive Podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. We're everywhere.